Well, one project that we have together, me and Tim and John here, is a record called Songs from the Mountain, which is based on a lot of things in Charles Frazier's novel, Cold Mountain. And we're real glad to be able to capture a lot of the music that he wrote about. As y'all know, he wrote about food so eloquently, the old food ways, as they call them, in those days, back in the middle 1800s in this part of the country. He really captured the music, and he captured a lot about the food, too. I think we're going to have some readings right about now, right?
We're doing the cornbread.
We're going to do the cornbread first.
I think it was after the fourth song.
Okay. All right, here they are.
Yeah, go.
Welcome, our lovely helpers.
I'm Matthew Lee, and do you know that Olympic event, the biathlon, where you cross-country ski for about, 2 miles and then have to stop and slow your heart rate down and aim at a target? That's about what we're doing right now. We're going to give you some mountain prose. Just chill on out. Get into it. It's food related, and hopefully it will mesh with the music. And apologies for my accent. I'm often accused of having a not very southern accent for a boiled peanut seller, but I always explain that it's because I spent 6 months in Massachusetts and six years in Massachusetts, a year in Little Rock, and 18 years in Charleston. And Ada, who I'm going to read about, is from Charleston, so. The agreement Ada and Ruby reached on that first morning was this. Ruby would move to the Cove and teach Ada how to run a farm. There would be very little money involved in her pay. They would take most of their meals together, but Ruby did not relish the idea of living with anyone else and decided she would move into the old hunting cabin. After they had eaten their first dinner of chicken and dumplings, Ruby went home and was able to wrap everything worth taking in a quilt. She had gathered the ends, slung it over her shoulder, and headed back to Black Cove, never looking back. The two women spent their first days together making an inventory of the place, listing the things that needed doing and their order of urgency. They walked together about the farm, Ruby looking around a lot, evaluating, talking constantly. The most urgent matter, she said, was to get a late season garden into the ground. Ada followed along, writing it all down in a notebook that heretofore had received only her bits of poetry, her sentiments on life and the large issues of the day. Now she wrote entries such as these. To be done immediately, lay out a garden for cool season crops, turnips, onions, cabbage, lettuce, greens. Cabbage seed, do we have any? Soon, patch shingles on barn roof. Do we have a maul and fro? Buy clay crocks for preserving tomatoes and beans. Pick herbs and make from them worm boluses for the horse. And on, so much to do, for apparently Ruby planned to require every yard of land to do its duty.
Ruby proved herself a marvel of energy, and she soon imposed a routine on Ada's day. Before dawn, Ruby would have walked down from the cabin, fed the horse, milked the cow, and be banging pots and pans in the kitchen, a hot fire going in the stove, yellow corn grits bubbling in a pot, eggs and bacon spitting grease in a black pan. Ada was not accustomed to rising in the gray of morning. In fact, through the summer, she had rarely risen before 10. But suddenly, there was little choice. If Ada lay abed, Ruby would come roust her out. Ruby figured setting things to working was her job, not waiting on somebody and doing their bidding. On the few occasions when Ada had slipped and given her an order as if to a servant, Ruby had just looked at Ada hard and had then gone on doing what she was doing. What the look said was that Ruby could be gone at a moment's notice, like morning fog on a sunny day. Part of the code for Ruby was that though she did not expect Ada to do the cooking at breakfast, she did expect her, at minimum, to be there to watch its conclusion. So Ada would walk down to the kitchen in her robe and sit in the chair in the warm stove corner and wrap her hands around a cup of coffee. Through the window, the day would be starting to take shape, gray and loose in its features. Even on days that would eventually prove to be clear, Ada could seldom make out even the palings of the fence around the kitchen garden through the fog. At some point, Ruby would blow out the yellow light of the lamp, and the kitchen would go dim, and then the light from outside would rise and fill the room. It seemed a thing of such wonder to Ada, who had not witnessed many dawns. All during the cooking and the eating, Ruby would talk seamlessly, drawing up hard plans for the coming day that struck Ada as incongruent with its soft vagueness out the window. By the time summer drew toward its conclusion, Ruby seemed to feel the approach of winter as urgently as a bear in autumn, eating all night and half the day to pack on the fat necessary to feed it through hibernation. All Ruby's talk was of exertion, the work it would take to build a momentum of survival to carry them through winter. To Ada, Ruby's monologues seemed composed mainly of verbs, all of them tiring. Plow, plant, hoe, cut, can, feed, kill. When Ada remarked that at least they could rest when winter came, Ruby said, "Oh, when winter comes, we'll mend fence and piece quilts and fix what's broke around here," which is a lot.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. All right. We're going to do a medley of a couple things that come from that Songs from the Mountain record. The first one's a slow piece that I wrote called Mountain Air, which I wrote about just kind of the mood of the book and try to capture some of that. It's an older sound that you don't hear too much anymore from the mountains. And then we're going to go right into a tune more from the eastern part of North Carolina, further east anyway, called Raleigh and Spencer, which sings a lot about fried chicken and fat meat and whiskey. So a few of the food groups there.